This is the Clear Light Podcast with me, Steve Taylor. I'd like to share with you the second part of my conversation with Zach Kahn. Zach sadly passed away just over a week ago, on May the 15th, 2023. This conversation was recorded around 2 weeks before his passing. It was a blessing to share his presence, to feel his acceptance and serenity in the face of imminent death. Zach shares his feelings about what is fundamentally important, what death can teach us about life, and how the qualities we develop in this life affect our transition into the next world. There is a third and final part of the conversation, which I will release soon. I feel kind of spiritually touched. I feel serene in your presence because of your mode of acceptance and surrender. It gives you or me a sense of what's valuable, which is being and acceptance.
When you say valuable, what do you really mean? What does your heart say about valuable?
I guess what I mean is that trivial stuff sort of floats away, and there's a sense that love, presence, these are the important things.
How are they important, and why are they important?
Because they're the fundamentals of life, the essence of
how do you know
being.
That
I don't know it, I feel it.
And how do you, if you feel it, how do you know it's valid? What is the validity of your feelings?
Because it gives me a sense of being attuned to life. It brings me a sense of harmony. Whereas the trivial stuff...
Now let's stay with harmony. What is it to you?
Harmony is attunement to being, to my inner being, to life itself, to other people.
Why do you use the word attunement?
I don't know, because it means... It means connection, being connected, not just with other people or with myself, but something more fundamental.
Can I?
It's just spirit, maybe.
Can I just jump in here?
Mm-hmm.
So the word attunement means there has to be some calibration that you have to do to be in harmony with others to feel connected. See, my version is slightly different to yours. It's not better. It's not worse. I'll offer it you, then you can play with that as much as you want, or ignore it as much as you want. Harmony is to prefer to be in relationship with all things at once. In that, there's no calibration to be had. Because if you calibrate to some, you're out of calibration to others. If you're tuning to one frequency, you're out of all frequencies. But in the very deepest sense in you, that light that you sustain, that your existence sustains upon, is in harmony with all things at once. And when you're at one, Steve doesn't exist. So the finite fades away, and the infinite becomes real. And in infinite, there's no end. And since you're in relationship to all things at once, you're not in conflict. You're only experiencing peace.
Conflict comes from duality, separation.
Conflict comes from being out of harmony with all things. It's very Zen.
Yeah. And are you feeling that at the moment? Are you feeling that sense of harmony?
Within myself.
And with other people?
Not necessarily.
No.
Well, they may not be feeling it with me yet.
Right.
I'm keeping my heart light, so I'm trying to navigate my life in a way that I don't create or cause unnecessary conflict. And that can mean just being out of alignment with others. But because I am transitioning, they are listening differently. They are treating me differently. When I was waiting in the waiting room for the taxi driver to pick me up, Steve, I jumped into the taxi. Well, I didn't literally jump in the taxi. I walked up to the taxi and got in. I was in the back seat, and there was a young Pakistani man, aged around 25 years old, on the phone as he was driving away, hands free. I'd just been told I had 2 months to live. I looked out the window and I could see the trees, tops of the trees, the blue sky and the clouds. And that's where I wanted to be. Just witnessing simplistic beauty that we tend to forget in our day to day. And as I'm entering into that world, his voice is coming across and shattering that peace that I was creating, because he was quite ambitious. You could tell, you know, on the phone, felt like I was getting punched in the head with every word. So I was wishing that he'd finish his phone call very quickly and not talk to me. And as life would have it, he puts the phone down and my phone rings. And it's a family member trying to find out what's gone on. And then I explained that the doctor said I've got 2 months to live. And as soon as I said that, the taxi environment went very quiet. His mind just went very quiet. His heart went very quiet. There was a silence in that taxi that wasn't there a moment ago. And you could see that his sense of alertness had increased. Anyway, I put my phone down, carried up looking at the trees. And as I was looking at them, I could feel a sadness, a faint sadness arise upwards from my heart towards my mind. So my attention went there, and I realized that I was sad because there were only so many days I had left to witness the beauty and the simplistic beauty of life. And I was okay with that, because that's a natural thing. You know, there'll be beauties on the other side. I've known this for a long time. In fact, when I died, the first time I known this, that this kind of beauty is not experienced anywhere in the universe other than this planet, in this particular way. It's highly unique, very unique indeed. I'm aware of that. As I'm looking out the window, the taxi driver says very softly and quietly, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure, why not?" And he said, "If you could go back 25 years." I said, "Yeah, there are two things that I would change. The first thing is I would be more kinder. The second most powerful force on the planet is kindness." He's asking me, he's thinking, what's the first? I can tell he's thinking it, yeah. So I said, the first is unconditional love. Not many people reach it. And if they touch it, they can't be consistent with it. Kindness is easy. And you do kindness because that's who you are. I wish I was less transactional in my early days and more kinder. Don't have a regret about it. But what I know now, if I knew that then, I'd be saying to my younger self, be kind. The world doesn't need more of anything. It needs kinder politicians. It needs kinder doctors. It needs kinder judges, kinder police officers, kinder nurses. It just needs a lot more kindness in a harsh world. So the second thing that I said to him is to travel more. I don't mean going to cities or beaches, whilst they're very nice, but traveling more where your jaw drops and your breath is taken away, and the horizons of your mind are widened and broadened, where it leaves such an imprint that it lasts with you for the rest of your life. I wish I had the courage to do more of that.
Yeah.
And it was about courage in the end, for me.
Mm-hmm.
How did he respond when you...
He went very quiet. And drove for 5 minutes without saying a word. I consciously shared silence with him.
You would give that message to everybody that kindness is the...
No, I won't. I mean, I never operated as a... This is a declaration that I have to spread out into the world. You know, it's one of many things, really. If somebody asked me what would you say to people about your life, I would say that kindness mattered. And I would say to you, everybody who's... it was my last dying breath and people wanted the last message from me, be kinder. That's what I would say. But I won't stand up in the world now and go around and say, I've seen the light, you need to be more kinder. You know, I have a sandwich board, the world's going to end, you need to be kinder.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I won't be doing that kind of stuff.
Down by Toppenden on the train a while ago, I noticed on the hillside they've put up big letters saying "Be kind" in giant letters by the side of the hill.
Like that today?
No, this was a while ago, a few weeks ago. How beautiful.
Yeah. But what makes somebody do that? What inspires somebody to put on "Be kind"?
I know, it's...
And what do they think is going to happen when they do that? What is their hope? What is the actual impact?
Yeah, I think it's a positive impact. A lot of people will see that on the train and think, wow, how lovely. You know, I'll practice that today, I'll be kind. There's so much negativity in the world, especially if you watch the news and follow politics. There's so much negativity. But I don't know if you feel the same, but I've always felt that essentially, deep down, human beings are kind and love is our true nature.
One of my spiritual teachers asked us to run an experiment. Said, if you stop watching the news and reading the newspapers and just kind of became more mindful and aware of your day-to-day life, in your community, how much of that, i.e. what's out there in the news, impacts you on a day-to-day basis? So since I was told I had 2 months to live, I've been walking around here and up and down and talking to people, and none of what happens in the news is impacting me at all.
So at the moment you're really enjoying just looking out the window and just witnessing the beauty of nature.
I'm enjoying being. Talking to my brother. And I was saying to him, you know, when you come to end of life, all your responsibilities fall away. I'm no longer worried about my mortgage, my car payments, my insurance, my TV license. So when all of those worries disappear, you have abundance of space in your mind then. Then what arises? Your conscience arises. Because it's drowned out by responsibilities. And then if you have some conscience, that very conscience begins to motivate you to reflect upon your conscience. Because you've got enough space now and there's no distractions unless you create them for yourself. And when you reflect on your conscience, the first kind of inquiry is, how well did you live your conscience in this world? And if you didn't live it, then regret, remorse arises. And then the realization that you've run out of time, that there was always a tomorrow to do this, and that tomorrow never came. And that's when your whole attitude toward death and fear and all the other emotions start arising within you. But if you've tried to live your conscience as best you could, then you might meet your death very well.
I think it's really important to live authentically. I guess that connects to what you're saying, you know. It would be a very unhappy experience to approach your final days feeling that you hadn't lived authentically, you hadn't been your true self, you'd just been playing roles or following conventions.
I don't know what my true self is, I'm being honest with you. But what I have done is try to live my truth. Or live my conscience. I think they're interchangeable. As best I could. And I think that's partly why I'm gifted this time now and gifted this state of being. At least that's my rationalization for it. Because I never lived entirely for myself. I'm not entirely worried about myself. That's beautiful, isn't it? I mean, it's not something that I engineered, Steve. It wasn't Zach's choices. When I was 25 years old, Steve, I just felt I had spiritual awakening after waking up. And as part of that process, you begin to kind of repent. It's probably too much of a religious word, but you go over your life and think, I wish to make some changes. I can see clearly that the choices I made weren't the best ones. So I wish to make some changes. And as part of that, you discover that the God you were taught isn't the God that you've now discovered or become aware of. You can never totally know God. And in that process, I went through a mini ritual and sat down in a very quiet space. And with tremendous vigor and passion, quiet passion and vigor, said to God, please make me the way you want me to be made. I think that was the most stupidest thing I ever did. Because I was 25 years old and just had spiritual awakening, I thought what that would be. I thought transformation was adornment. So if you use me as a metaphor as a house, I thought God would add a swimming pool, quite a number of bedrooms and suite rooms. And it didn't occur to me that God would go, okay, let's take this complete structure down, brick by brick. Because developers do that, don't they? They buy something, and instead of renovating it, they blow it up, raise it to the ground, and start again. And I think that's what's happened with me. Slowly, slowly, very methodically, strategically, I've been deconstructed. I'm not completely destructed, I think this goes on forever. But inside, something else was being made of a different substance. And at some point in 2009, it had sovereignty and I didn't anymore. That process is still ongoing. I think that's an eternity process. So I say to my family, ask for what you want from God. Never ask God what he wants for you. Because your life will not be yours anymore. It will be turned inside out, upside down. And it will be devastation.
Spiritual awakening is a lot to do with deconstruction. And as opposed to constructing an ego, constructing an identity, and building, accumulating, it's the opposite.
I mean, for me, I would say that I lost a lot in my life. I have continual loss in my life. But I've gained so much inside. I've become more aware of so much. If you're going to measure anything, it's to measure it when you're at the end of life and you're dying. Your ego fades anyway. And then the truth arises. And in that truth, it's a measure of your life. And if this is any measure, then that theorizing that I just talked about, how you can adorn a house, but actually the house was raised to the ground. And just when you think it was going to end.
Reminds me of there's a song by Bob Dylan where he sings, when you think you've lost everything, you always find there's a little more you could lose.
Story of my life, honestly, Steve. Story of my life. Yeah. Amazing, yeah. Did you know I climbed mountains, Steve?
I didn't know that.
And when I climbed up mountains and reached the summit, the initial thing is just, wow, right? Poof. The view is just spectacular. And then you just sit there. And what used to happen to me is that the borders in the mind would just drop. So the mind feels confined here, but when I've climbed a mountain, it would just be as wide as sky. My mind would be as wide as sky, really. And then there'd be a silence in that. There would be, you know, there would be thoughts that would come and go, but it wouldn't, there's no intensity to them. And because my mind was wide as sky, and I seemed to be very calm and peaceful, potentials and opportunities would come that I wouldn't see if I was at the bottom of the mountain. And I always found that very useful going into nature. And it would take at least 40 minutes of walking before I could drop the world completely. And then began to walk with nature or into nature, and then experience a little bit of silence or slowing down of the mind and everything else. And then it was like, you know, if I was struggling with a problem, a potential would appear that wasn't there before, or at least I could see something that I could explore that wasn't there. So it's my hope with this is that when people listen to this, that perhaps a potential opens up to them that wasn't present before they listened to this. Perhaps bringing some nature to them.
Yeah, that's a lovely, lovely metaphor. I think people are often just so immersed in their day-to-day lives, they're so busy with doing what needs to be done, bringing up their kids and working and watching TV, that they never kind of, or almost never look beyond that. They want to, but they maybe don't get the opportunity to, but sometimes something powerful comes into their world, you know, and opens them up and gives them a wider perspective.
Well, you've written a book about this, haven't you, Steve? I mean, trauma.
Yeah.
Opens you up to a wider reality sometimes, doesn't it? Spiritual Awakening, Extraordinary Awakenings is your book.
But it could also be wisdom. Wisdom could come into their lives from a source like this. I don't know if you feel the same, but you know, the Platonic world of ideals, the perfect forms.
Yes.
I often feel that, you know, there is something like that. There's this sort of trivial world of everyday life, and there's this world of higher forms, and sometimes there's a separation between them.
It's interesting you put that there, because when your hand went up here, my instinct was to say to you, Steve, it's there, but it's also here. If you are able to see through it, through the small things, on the underlying fabric is sacred geometry of the universe. It's everywhere. But you know, it you see, what we do is we plop things on the land, don't we? Like buildings, we plop everything, yeah. And we create things without being in relationship to all things and seeking harmony. If we were to seek harmony in everything that we created, and I mean everything, then the Platonic ideals would be ever present in our day-to-day lives. And that was the idea of sacred geometry in the mosques and the temples and the churches, is that it was a reminder that if we lived in harmony with all things, that there would be no conflict. There'd still be challenge, but not conflict.
Have you felt the need to make contact with anybody from the past to, you know, rekindle relationships or to heal any relationships?
No, I've not needed to. I've let my heart decide. I've let my heart guide me, and nothing has come up but just to meet people from the past and in the present, to thank them for being in my life in some way or other. And everybody that I've spoken to is touched by that. I won't be able to do it everybody. I'll run out of time. Sometimes what happens is this, Steve, as well. New age versions of spirituality is that one has to be almost like a saint when you're practicing spirituality. But the spirituality that I practice challenges you to be an authentic self. That means sometimes you're going to rub people up the wrong way, because the truth divides people. You'll have people that will love you for the rest of your life, whether you see them or not. But you'll have people that hate you also. That is the nature of truth. So it could be that in living my truth, that I have upset people. But I don't need to make amends for that. At least my heart is saying I don't need to make amends for that. What I found, though, is that by living my truth, people that get to know me realize that I'm coming from a good space, a good place, and they're willing to forgive me again and again. And those that don't, they just don't realize where I'm coming from. But mostly, my experience is that people have asked for my forgiveness. I ask for theirs as well.
Mm-hmm. It's strange that life is a temporary phenomenon, but I don't think most people realise that. Most people seem to operate on the basis of permanence. But I think if you realise that life is temporary and it could be taken away at any moment, and it is going to be taken away at some point, then I'm sure that would completely change people's perspective and behaviour.
It's very difficult, Steve, to live like that in this world. Unless it's a complete state of being. Because even with me having died and come back, my relationship with time changed completely. Things that were important were no longer important. Things that are not important were massively important. So there's quite an inverse relationship with the importance of things. And I value things that people discarded or didn't even value. We squander time. Human beings squander time because we believe that we have enormous amounts of it. And even if you do have enormous amounts of it, it's never enough. But because of the way that the whole system is set up, this world is set up, this entire system is set up to work. It's not family centered. It's not even religiously centered or prayer centered anymore. Everything revolves around work. After school club, breakfast mornings, 9 to 5 office hours, holy days are now holidays.
Yeah.
Everything, bank holidays. It's all set up so even our education system doesn't teach us life skills to live life full and well. It teaches us to be good workers so we can earn a living. Every aspect of our world is set up that way. We're in a system that confines us to focus on one thing, money. I'm not saying everybody lives that life. I'm saying the system is designed so that we are confined to thinking that way. Although a lot of us can escape that thinking, we cannot escape that system. We can transcend the thinking that a lot of us have. What that does, though, is it confines your ability to think that life is temporary, because you don't have the time to be able to contemplate it. And to be able to contemplate it means you have to repeatedly contemplate it, so it's established within you. You cannot establish within you if you are fighting time to complete tasks that allow you to continue living. Therefore, your relationship with time is forced. And when it's forced, you don't have time to contemplate about anything else. And because the system is so pushing you so hard, that any moments that you have, you're using them to rest, recuperate, regenerate for the next day,
yeah,
or the next week, not for yourself.
Is that how your relationship to time changed? You saw time as a, you know, you no longer felt forced to do, and saw time as an opportunity to be.
No, what it made me do, it made me realize that I was in a system that was forcing me. And if I wanted to make some changes, it would mean I have to make some sacrifices. I'd have to stop chasing dreams that would force me to be in forced time. I'd have to give up them. And when you go to decide, they're not important at all. You know, you're talking about value and harmony. Where's the value and harmony in chasing something that is not going to be real, or is not even, has no endurance when you transition? So it made me, so I had to make choices. And I made choices where I stayed out of chasing things.
So you lived a simpler life?
Yeah. So my life's
less materialistic.
Yeah. And relationship became far more important, because those things are real. Why? Because they nurture the values and qualities within oneself that will go to the other side. And since life is enduring, if you have developed qualities that will dictate the kind of experience that you're going to have on this side, that's an investment that you need to really think about.
You think there is a strong connection between how we live on this side and what we'll experience on the other side?
Absolutely, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, every religious practice that I can think of is looking to transform what's in your heart, the heart that endures.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that the first time we spoke about the heart, how what's all that's going to be left at the end is what's in your heart.
Yeah, I don't mean your physical heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's your soul, it's your heart, spiritual energy, the essence of you, whatever label you wish to use.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever endures and goes to the side is what you take with you.
And that will determine...
That defines you.
Yeah. And that will define your experience.
To some extent.
After death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you imagine it to be a currency, then it's similar to the metaphor here, where if you have lots of money, you have more options. If you have less money, you have less options. Your currency over there is your qualities. With greater qualities come greater options. Also, if you're traveling lighter, you're ascending higher.